I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Hey, our guests today are Angela Heilson and Ryan Hondo. Together, they are the Idaho band Dirt Rustle. We're talking about music right here in Idaho, Peter.
Yeah, this is great. This is one of the bands that we saw at Tree Fort, and I did have them marked down on the schedule to go see, so I'm happy we got them on the show today.
They were fun to watch. I was right in front there next to the drum kit with my earplugs on, and they were just rocking it.
Yeah,
I had crowd was really into it.
Had my earplugs on too, so take care of those ears.
Old people got to take care of that ear.
Right.
Tinnitus, bad thing.
Not good. I have it 24 hours.
I'm sorry. Okay, well, first, before we get there, nature in the news.
Yeah, Leif. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization, the global demand for nitrogen as fertilizer is growing annually by 1%, which is an increase of about 1 million tons per year.
We need nitrogen. Plants need nitrogen.
Right, right. The problem, though, is how they're producing fertilizer requires a significant amount of energy from non-renewable energy sources, which then, of course, increases the CO2 emissions. And as a planet that we're already feeling the effects of climate change and increased temperatures, we got to figure out a way to reduce those CO2 emissions.
But we still need to get the nitrogen.
We still need to get the nitrogen. And lucky, we've got some research being conducted that looks at yellow water.
Yellow water, tasty
yellow
as
water
it
is, well, you know, human urine. And a human urine, as you would imagine, is quite plentiful and renewable for nitrogen sources. And what these researchers have been able to do is, with their test study, in a building, they've been collecting yellow water or urine from waterless urinals. You're getting straight urine.
Straight from the source.
Yep. It's fantastic. And it's in a big building, so you know they got plenty. Then they're mixing it with a base to regulate the acidity of the urine.
Okay.
And then they add some microorganisms, which transform the urea into nitrate. And then they had a hydroponic tomato set up, and then they were using the yellow water to fertilize these tomatoes. And do you know what they found?
The tomatoes turned yellow.
No, that 1 cubic meter of treated yellow water produced 75 kilograms of nitrogen, which could grow approximately 2.4 tons of tomatoes.
P to tomatoes. And it's very effective.
Very effective.
Huh. So is there like maybe an idea to scale this up?
Right. I think that would be the next step as to how they can scale this up. And they really didn't go into how many microorganisms they need to add, what they add for the base to reduce the acidity.
Sure.
You know, so again, I suppose once they start scaling it up, then they have to look at costs and such. But so far, so good.
Okay. So this sounds gross, right? This sounds like a lot of bless the researchers who are doing this work. But human waste turned into something useful, right?
Right.
But that's not like all that different from using manure to fertilize crops and fields, right? So it's kind of the same idea.
Yep.
Well, that's pretty cool. And so maybe this will take off, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think of all of these waterless urinals at rest stops across interstates.
And then tomato growth operations behind the
rest areas.
I love it. Well, we're going to do a hard transition now to our trivia question for the day, which deals with band Dirt Rustle. Where was their first live gig? We're going to ask them a whole bunch of other things when we come back. Stay tuned. Dirt Rustle's joining the show.
KISU FM, Your Ear to the World, is available live anywhere in the world at KISU.org or with the new KISU mobile app. Did you know you can also listen with your smart device with the command play KISU FM?
Hey, welcome back from the break. Our guests today are Angela Heilson and Ryan Hondo. They're from Dirt Rustle. It's an Idaho band. So first off, welcome to The Nature of Idaho.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Angela and Ryan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe introduce us a little bit to the band. Obviously, we'll talk a lot more about that. So, Angela, you first.
Yeah, I'm Angela, and I'm played drums with Hondo here for the past, well, actually, I shouldn't say that because I don't even know, past few years. Yeah.
I'm Ryan Hondo. I play guitar, and
we're a little duo.
It's pretty fun. We got together. I'd been playing acoustically for a long time, and I work at a music venue in Boise called the Neurolux, and I had observed Angela play in, I think, like two bands maybe at that time. There was one called Desert Graves that she played in years ago that was like a kind of doomy, cool psych rock band, and I just kind of floated the idea. I didn't even know her, actually. I was just like, hey, I think you're a good drummer, and I've been playing by myself for a long time, and I'd been out of a band for a couple years and had some material that I'd been working on, and so just asked her, and we just got together and jammed. And like,
my side of that experience was, I think, after a show.
Yeah.
You, like, looked at me and started doing a beeline, and I was like, oh, no, this guy. I was scared because I didn't actually know him at the time. Like, yeah. This guy's like, I got to run to the bathroom, but he caught me. And then I was like, oh, okay, we're...
I was like, hey, you're good.
And I was like, yeah. Oh, God, hi.
You didn't not a creep, I promise.
You didn't try to poke him in the eyes with your drumsticks? Yeah. Come on.
No, I didn't have him with me, but I just could... I know he was, like, coming my way, and I'm like, I'm a very introverted person, so I was like, oh, God, I don't want to have a conversation. So,
yeah.
And here we are.
And here you are.
Right? So when we sat down and we listened to Dirt Russell, you can describe your sound, but with Ryan saying that he was playing acoustic, Dirt Russell to acoustic is a little bit different. And so how did you guys kind of develop your sound?
Well, because you had a bunch of recorded little diddlies,
yeah,
just to get started. He's kind of more of in the metal, heavier stuff. I grew up playing in, like, jazz band, and then this, of course, that psych rock band I was in. But, yeah, you just sent them over to me, and I was like, Jesus, what time signature are these in? So I spent a long time trying to figure out these riffs and stuff and find something to play with it, and I kind of questioned. I was like, I don't know if I'm the right drummer for you, because maybe you need, like, more of a metal drummer that's going to, you know, have, like, double bass and do all these wild things, but I guess you wanted to stick me around, keep me around.
Yeah, it was... There's just something in Angela's style that I really appreciated, and I was just, I observe a lot of bands play working at a venue, and so you can kind of see when somebody's really has their own voice in whatever they're doing. I mean, we jammed a couple times, and it was like, seemed to be like really complimentary to each other in certain ways, but then there's definitely like been like times where we really kind of have to fight for it, like we're really pushing hard to figure stuff out, and it gets really frustrating, but I think we've just stuck with it enough times that, like, it's been validating to, like, break through those little plateaus and then be like, oh, okay, now we got it, and then move on to other things. It's kind of having that in the back pocket. It's like, we know we just need to keep being resilient and pushing through or making decisions on cutting something out, which is something we do sometimes.
Well, I've got to say...
It's very busy music, so it's like, sometimes you got to, like, cut some fat here and there.
Yeah, but I do have to say, when we were watching the show, Angela, you absolutely looked like you were having a blast up there and enjoying the odd time signatures. So good job for sticking it out.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always fun. I love playing live in this project. It's everybody knows Hondo, and he's just like a comedic act in the first place. So everyone's there for a little bit of that and have a good time and me be uncomfortable while he says weird jokes, and everybody thinks that's just funny.
Well, it works.
Like,
it works
that
out.
Dynamic.
It's a good dynamic. I think it's an interesting combo. So I hate pigeonholing music, and so I'm not going to ask you to pigeonhole music, but how could somebody who hasn't heard your music, I don't know, build sort of an expectation of, like, what kinds of sounds are you coming from, especially with the style of music that you are putting together here?
What are some of those bands everybody keeps thinking we sound like?
Oh,
there's one that keeps coming up.
It's the Josh Homies, like, original band.
Oh, Caius.
Caius.
Yep.
Some bands like Caius, and I think that's mainly like the riffs and stuff like that.
Right.
And that's definitely an influence. I kind of grew up listening to like more metal and like metalcore and some stuff like that. And I wouldn't say that that's what we're doing now, but but sure. definitely like a hard rock influence.
And for sure.
Trying to experiment. I always have trouble when people ask about genre because I'm like, it's like, it's metal, but it's also not metal. It's like post rock, but it's not post rock. It's like post hardcore, but it's not post hardcore. So it's just,
Right. Well, that's where the labels, you know, they kind of fall apart a little bit. So, you know, in my generation, when I was coming up a teen in the 90s or something like that, you know, it would definitely would have fit into the alternative, whatever, grunge world. But it's not exactly that. It's got a little Soundgarden-y sound to it occasionally, some Tool sound in it, if anybody can relate to those kinds of sounds. But it's so much different from that. I listen to a lot of progressive, and the drumming is like prog rock all the way, and it totally excited me when I was listening to you play Angela, because I couldn't keep a count. I could not keep a count on what the heck you were doing.
I don't know if I listened.
It sounded awesome.
Yeah, I definitely listen to a lot of prog, and that's definitely an influence. But also, I think the limitations of just having two instruments. So there's the elements are there, but you can't obviously do some of the other things.
Sure. But, you know, out of a two-piece, and two pieces are not terribly common, you guys sounded really full. Like, there was a lot of sound coming and a lot of interesting sound coming out. I can't say enough.
And what I appreciate as well is because, of course, when you say two-piece, everybody will automatically go to the White Stripes or Black Keys. And you guys come in with a sound completely different from them. And as Leaf said, if you didn't realize you were a two-piece, you would think that you're a full band because the sound just comes out and hits you. It's full and it's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. I don't know if we can add another person. This is enough.
I think when we got together, we had talked about getting a bass player, but then we wrote a few songs and we're like, let's just like keep this rocking. And it's like, Angela's always been in like a bunch, maybe not a bunch of other bands, it's exaggerating, but like, she's always had another band or another project. She's also in the French Tips. She's always had kind of a few things going on, and so it's hard to organize. You know, I'm a little more social, and I don't know what side of the brain it is, but we're kind of opposite. She's very organized. I'm a little ADHD. So it's like just getting us in the same room sometimes is difficult, and I think it was just kind of the economics of it just made sense. And I think that we just grew in a different direction. I didn't really see it going this way, what we're doing now, but it's been great. It's been a fun ride, and it just kind of evolves as we go. It's fun.
You're based in Boise now. You didn't grow up in Boise, either of you?
No.
Where did you guys?
I'm in Idaho Falls.
Idaho Falls, Angela?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm from Burley, and then I came up to Boise to go to college.
Yeah. And so how's the scene in Boise for music, and how have you found your place within it? I'm sure working at Neuralix is a sort of an inside track in a way.
Yeah, I think it took me a little while to kind of get in the music scene here. I played drums all through my like junior high and high school years, more in like jazz band and things like that. And when I went to college, I sort of dropped drums because I'm like, I'm not doing this for a living. That was just for fun. And anyway, so when I graduated and moved to Boise, my boyfriend at the time, he was in a bunch of projects. He was a bass player. I think we just wanted a jam or whatever. And so we started Desert Graves and then played a bunch of shows. And then that was kind of my ticket to like meeting a lot of people in the Boise music scene and people coming to our shows and then forming other bands because of that band. So that was kind of how I got introduced to the Boise music scene. But it was kind of tough at first. It's definitely grown, especially with Tree Fort and all the different shows that are coming here into town. But I think it took Boise quite a while to have like, as this to be like a stopping place for bands rather than just like a pass through to get to Salt Lake or to get to Portland. You know, people are like, oh, you can actually stop here and play here and have like a decent show now. And that took a while to happen, but I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like in the last 10 years, there's been a huge growth of like proper venues. It used to be a lot more DIY. So like, you know, all through like the 90s and early 2000s, it was like you had like the Knitting Factory or the Egyptian, which is a big, you know, theater, or then the Neuralux, and then maybe a few other ones. And then everything else, there was a pretty big DIY, like, punk scene, like, house shows were a big thing. But obviously, you know, like, all felt the growing pains of gentrification. So a lot of those places are now no longer, you know, house shows anymore. But with that, there's also more venues. And
yeah. More like all ages venues was kind of a big thing for all the kids and teen punks can't go to these house shows that closed down. There's nowhere to have the shows for the kids. So that was missing from Boise for quite a while. And I know like the Shredder and a couple places sort of try to like fill that void for a while. But
it's definitely a lot better now. And yeah, when I first moved up here, I didn't know anybody. And I think the first band that I got together with, I met them through MySpace, if that gives you any. I literally was just going down the list of like, okay, local bands, you know, and then like, which ones are looking for a guitar player? But even that was like, I played with them for years and then met other people, and it just kind of took a while. But the community is a lot stronger and grown a lot more, and is a lot, I mean, there's, I don't want to say gatekeeping, but there's just like, you know, people hold things tight.
Sure.
And when they're threatened, and I think just in the last decade, it's been really nice to see it grow in a way that's like, it's not even like genre. Like you have all these friends, groups that are like, this person plays, you know, Americana, and they're best friends with this person that's in this metal band, and they're best friends with, you know, like there's all these groups of people supporting each other now. So it's really cool.
I think this is a great discussion on why it is so important to support our local bands, no matter what type of music they play. And like you said earlier, the genre term, you know, for me, if you like the music, you like the music. Who really cares what type you're listening to? And being able to support a whole wide range opens up the doors for what is happening in Boise right now. Mm-hmm. If we wanted to keep it kind of closed off into our little niche, we wouldn't have Treefort, and we wouldn't be able to come for 4 or 5 days and see absolutely every type of music you could ever want to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the place that I work at has always been kind of a place like that, where it's like, people will be like, what kind of music do the people play here? I'm like, literally everything you can think of. And then, like, sometimes theatrical stuff will be in there, you know, it's...
Sometimes karaoke.
Yeah, sometimes karaoke.
Where Honda hosts.
Yeah, I host karaoke.
Oh, right.
It's just kind of, like, cool to see, like you said, like, one of my good friends is in a hip-hop group called Dedicated Servers, and, like I'll go see him. And then what it's Axiom and Andio and like all of this. I mean, that would not be normally a thing that like people would assume I would be into, but I love watching them perform because it's just like really energetic and fun. And I just like seeing people thrive. So,
yeah, I don't know. Our experience at Treefort, it's so fun to just graze on music, and there's no, again, there's no boundaries of genre. It's one show after another, or one venue to the next. And you'll see just a whole cross-section of different musical styles and a lot of local or Idaho-grown bands. And it's just fantastic to see.
I love to crowd watch as well. And so you will see a whole wide range of people in a venue that you're like, huh, I wonder if this is the first time they've ever listened to this type of music. Or I wonder, they're dancing, so good job, you know.
What was your experience at Treefort? Obviously, you performed as a performer. What was your sort of feel for how that festival runs?
Well, this time we got to perform at Neuralux, which is kind of like a home.
Yeah.
It's like our home venue. We're really comfortable there. Mm-hmm. We know all the bartenders, of course. So that was really cool. And that just felt really like a nice, warm hug.
Yeah. It is kind of funny, though. During the show, I'm like, wow, is Ryan's family really here?
Yeah. Yeah, my folks come out.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's cool. It's really fun. They didn't always used to live here, so all of them live here now. So, like, my sisters and my mom and dad, and so they'll come out.
Did you get a chance to tour around and see other bands while the Treefort was in operation?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's like 95% of the fun is like, okay, I got a ticket in, which is cool, but now I get to go. I was talking to someone else about this. It's kind of a nice way to see all your friends and local bands, like all in one sitting, because usually, you know, people have shows all these different times. You can't always go, but now you kind of set aside this like week to do this, and now you're just like, oh, I just can go check out this band and this band and this band at these different venues all in like 3 days. And it's kind of a fun way to just see what everyone's up to these days, and also just a good family friendly situation. There's like a little bit of something for everyone, and like people are like, oh, Tree Fort's really expensive, and it's actually probably, for what you kind of get, it's not nearly as expensive as other bigger festivals, but they do a really good job of curating different things for different folks. Like, there's even like Free Fort. Like, you could pretty much do Tree Fort for free. There's like at least three free stages, and then all the food stuff, and there's just a bunch of free stuff, which is great, and then kids stuff. I don't know. There's just a lot of different things for everybody, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, I work a lot during that week because I work at the Neurolux. So this year I had 2 days off, which was nice. But yeah, there's just like a ton. I'm always shocked at like how many things there are to do, even if you're just wandering around. And just like the, I don't know, the energy is just different than a lot of festivals. It seems really community driven.
So I wanted to ask you about being a band in Boise. How do you go about recording? Is there infrastructure there? Are there ways to get a good sounding recording there?
I mean, there's a bunch of different ways. I think a lot of people do the DIY route, but we've had there's a lot of like folks in our town that are into the recording and audio engineers and stuff, whether they be in bands or musicians themselves, and they develop a studio. So our first one, we had some friends that are recording folks.
Yeah, it's Logan Hyde and Danny Kerr. They're in a band called Foul Weather. And there's a warehouse space, Garden City, that had been kind of used as this like practice space for a very long time. And then they got a bunch of equipment and they were just kind of experimenting with it. So they had been doing their own stuff, and they kind of, it just, for our first EP, it was just kind of this trial run for both of us to like, we wanted to get this stuff recorded. You know, they needed somebody to record that's different than what they do, so they could try, you know. And they've grown and done their own thing, and we've kind of gone this other direction, but I think we've always just tried to keep it local as much as we can. I think the only thing that we went out of state for was mastering. Angela has a connection
in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. That's the only thing. Otherwise, we just kind of...
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering what we'll do next when we actually have a new batch of songs ready, which will take probably forever. But when that ever happens, we'll have to discuss where we're going to go.
Yeah.
I think we'd like to kind of not shop around, but just like, okay, we used these guys last time. What would it be like using these folks over here? I think our friend Zach Bonhaus recorded our Outside Dogs album, and he has since moved away. So he's not doing any engineering, only like mixing and mastering. So we're like, okay, so who's going to... You know, I'm very big on like, I need the drums to sound good is all I want. You know?
huge deal.
And like, I only have like 2 or 3 takes before I'm like royally messing up these songs. The different time signatures, my memory, they're fast. I don't know.
And we also like record the, I think we just agreed that like the best approach for us is to record the drums and guitar live with like a scratch vocal track. So like, all that stuff is all pretty much live, just so we can just kind of nail it. Because I also find it to be kind of tedious to break it down and just, I mean, we know the songs, so let's just play through it and we'll know if it feels good or not. But yeah, it does kind of get exhausting after a couple takes of like blasting through stuff and like, oh, here comes the hard part, you know? And then it's
like... I prefer that way. I'm not like a studio musician where I'm just like kind of perfect. I thrive on a live playing setting, and that's where I feel like you feel that energy through the recording when you're playing live together, rather than, okay, I'm going to record this drum track to a click, and so I'm so focused on playing to the click. There's no emotion and whatever behind the playing. So I like my projects. We've always just recorded live, like together in maybe different rooms, but at least we can play together.
Yeah. And the way we perform really comes through with, like, I'm pretty proud of the LP we put out, the Outside Dogs, and how it turned out. Because it was just like a really natural progression of what we were already doing.
Right. I was going to say, and you go to a show and you're like, well, they don't sound anything like the album I have. And it's because they broke it all down into pieces. And to me, it just makes sense that if you're going to record as the band.
Yeah. Yeah, I get frustrated when things sound overproduced, even if I really like a band, because I'm like, oh, I'm... And then, I mean, sometimes some bands knock it out of the park, but when you can tell there's, like, so many layers, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I don't know if this is good, but I don't know if it's going to...
Right.
It's going to be good live. I don't know.
So with Outside Dogs, is it all just online, or do you have, like, vinyl and a, quote, hard copy that folks can pick up as well?
Yeah, we have vinyl that's up on our Bandcamp.
Yep. Pretty cool vinyl.
We had a local artist, Miguel Almeida, design that artwork for it. He's a very prolific artist in this town, Mexican artist. He's incredible. He has a wonderful style that really fit with what this album kind of was about. And he kind of took our idea and made some really sick artwork for it. So I'm just all about supporting other artists in this town, whether it's music or, you know, different types of art. So I like to keep it local.
Yeah. Just like people we know. I mean, I feel like we just know so many talented people just in this town. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And like Miguel's work that he did for our album, I don't even know. I feel like we got him to do it right before his like career took this huge spike. So
he got him early.
Yeah.
We got him before it was cool.
That's right.
Imagine murals and like logo, all these things. It's really cool to That's see cool. these friends like thrive.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Right on. Okay, so I started the show with a very cryptic trivia question that maybe somebody caught you on your first gig, but can you tell us about where and when your first live gig was?
I have a couple friends. They were in this band called Unhallowed. One of them owned this house. It's over by West Side Drive-In in Boise off State Street. It was called the Mad Sun House, and it was a basement show. Let's see, it was us, Unhallowed, and then...
I thought it would come to me, too.
I remember
it. It was like a bunch of duos.
Yeah.
We were all like duos.
All duos.
Yeah.
Only duo
and
show.
It was really loud. It's just like a 20-foot by 30-foot concrete wall basement.
Great acoustics.
Just like that office carpet. Yeah. And then just,
right.
I had two half stacks. One was a bass amp and one was a guitar amp and the drums. And then we just had one mic, I think. It was a full basement of people going up the stairs, so it was pretty fun.
It was a 20-foot by 20-foot basement, and you got all those people in there. Everyone tight.
There's video on YouTube somewhere.
That's great. Well, Angela Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. And for all our listeners, go to @DirtRussell on Instagram. And if you like what you see on Instagram, definitely go to Bandcamp. And you can get it streaming. But, you know, do the old-fashioned thing and grab a piece of vinyl and put it on your stereo. That's still some of the better listening out there.
High-octane energy right there on LP.
I had to show my oldest daughter how to use vinyl, by the way.
Oh, man.
And then she got disappointed because, well, that's a lot of work to listen to side two.
Kids so, these days.
I know, right?
Right.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Again, thank you, guys.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU FM. Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University, with editing and production by Shelby McGovern and Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org, from Spotify or other select podcast services, or from KISU's mobile app. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.